Welcome to the Political Rewind. I'm Muthoni Muturi. Coming up today, undecided in New Mexico. And a lack of green fades a solid red. But first, let's Truth Squad the rematch.
The presidential candidates made many claims in last night's debate, claims that we are covering throughout this morning. Now is the moment when we check some of their facts. We've done this after many nationally broadcast debates and speeches. A team of NPR correspondents was listening into the debate last night, and they join us this morning. And we begin with the biggest subject of the evening, the economy. The candidates started with the financial crisis. Here's a statement by Senator McCain.
Fannie and Freddie were the catalyst, the match that started this forest fire. There were some of us that stood up against it. There was others who took a hike.
Okay, so Senator McCain says Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the government-founded institutions, started this. Let's bring in NPR's Jim Ciroli, who covers the economy. And Jim, were Fannie and Freddie the match that lit the fire?
You know, I think most people would say that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were one of the reasons the mortgage business spun out of control. But I think they were really only one factor. A bigger factor was the system in which mortgages were.
From NPR News in Washington,
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Ari Shapiro.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Renee Montaigne is on assignment in New Mexico. The presidential candidates made many claims in last night's debate, claims that we are covering throughout this morning. Now is the moment when we check some of their facts. We've done this after many nationally broadcast debates and speeches. A team of NPR correspondents was listening into the debate last night, and they join us this morning. And we begin with the biggest subject of the evening, the economy. The candidates started with the financial crisis. Here's a statement by Senator McCain.
Fannie and Freddie were the catalyst, the match that started this forest fire. There were some of us that stood up against it. There was others who took a hike.
Okay, so Senator McCain says Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the government-founded institutions, started this. Let's bring in NPR's Jim Ciroli, who covers the economy. And Jim, were Fannie and Freddie the match that lit the fire?
You know, I think most people would say that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were one of the reasons the mortgage business spun out of control. But I think they were really only one factor. A bigger factor was the system in which mortgages were sold and then bundled together and converted into securities. These were very profitable for a long time. Wall Street loved them. And that was one of the reasons why the mortgage business grew so much.
Okay, so having given a perhaps too simple explanation for the credit crisis, Senator McCain goes on to say that his opponent, Barack Obama, is, quote, the second highest recipient of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac money in history. Is he?
He is the second biggest recipient after Connecticut Senator Christopher Dodd. Obama got $126,000 from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. John McCain got approximately $21,500. John McCain also has another connection to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. His campaign manager, Rick Davis, his lobbying firm, was paid up to $15,000 a month by Freddie Mac. Until recently, the McCain campaign says he himself was actually not involved with any of the lobbying efforts.
Something McCain did not mention. Now, here's another claim that Senator Obama makes over and over about his opponent, including last night.
Senator McCain and I have some fundamental disagreements on the economy, starting with Senator McCain's statement earlier that he thought the fundamentals of the economy were sound.
Fundamentally sound. That is an accurate quote, but not a complete quote. We went back to tape of what John McCain actually said 3 weeks ago and found a more nuanced statement about the economy.
There's been tremendous turmoil in our financial markets and Wall Street. And people are frightened by these events. Our economy, I think, still, the fundamentals of our economy are strong, but these are very, very difficult times.
The full quote there from John McCain several weeks ago. Let's move on now to another subject that was debated, taxes. There was a lot of back and forth, including this claim by Senator McCain.
Senator Obama's secret that you don't know is that his tax increases will increase taxes on 50% of small business revenue. Small businesses across America will have to cut jobs and will have their taxes increase and won't be able to hire because of Senator Obama's tax policies.
David Wessel of the Wall Street Journal, a regular on this program, was listening in. And David, is Obama planning to raise taxes on 50% of small businesses?
Well, it depends what your definition of small is. Senator Obama is planning to raise taxes on the top income tax brackets, and it is true that many small businesses pay taxes at ordinary income tax rates. But the majority of small businesses simply don't make enough money to be covered by Senator Obama's proposed tax increases.
So most won't be affected?
Correct.
That's David Wessel of the Wall Street Journal. Let's move on now to health policy, another subject in the debate, and a claim hereby made by Senator McCain.
If you're a small business person and you don't insure your employees, Senator Obama will fine you. Will fine you. That's remarkable.
That's remarkable, but is it true? NPR's Julie Rovner, who covers health policy.
In a word, no. Senator Obama's plan would require most employers to either cover their employees with health insurance or else pay a fee to the government to help provide coverage. But the smallest employers would not be covered by this mandate, and the rest of small employers would be given a rather generous tax credit to help them pay for that.
So McCain's claim about Obama, not so true. Let's look at an Obama claim about McCain. He says McCain is basically going to increase your taxes.
He says that he's going to give you a $5,000 tax credit. What he doesn't tell you is that he is going to tax your employer-based health care benefits for the first time ever. So what one hand giveth, the other hand taketh away.
Really?
Not really. It's a little bit of an exaggeration. For the vast majority of people, the tax credit that Senator McCain would offer would be larger, at least starting out, than the taxes that they would owe on that employer-provided tax benefits. Over time, however, Senator Obama may be right. If that tax credit doesn't go up as fast as health care premiums go up, then a lot of people could find themselves paying taxes on the value of their health benefits.
Julie Rovner, let's move on to another subject now, energy. Senator Obama spoke of setting a goal to free the United States from dependence on Middle Eastern oil within 10 years. NPR's Richard Harris was listening. Is that possible, Richard?
It's a noble goal, but it is not realistic. The Middle East gives us about 20% of our oil imports. That's a pretty big chunk to replace. Drilling offshore will not get it to us, certainly not in 10 years, probably not ever. Alternative fuels are a possibility on the horizon, but they're on the distant horizon. Maybe 2030 they could start really weighing in. But as a short-term goal, it doesn't seem to be realistic.
Thanks, Richard. And since we were talking about the Middle East and oil from the Middle East, let's stay with foreign policy because the candidates talked about Pakistan last night. Here's a statement by Senator McCain.
Senator Obama likes to talk loudly. In fact, he said he wants to announce that he's going to attack Pakistan.
NPR's Michelle Kellerman covers the State Department for us. And Michelle, did Obama really say he, quote, wants to announce, end quote, an attack?
Not exactly. I mean, last night he was basically in line with what he's been saying. He said that if we know where Osama bin Laden is, we know he's in Pakistan. Pakistan won't or is unwilling to act. We will. McCain's line of attack is that, you know, Obama shouldn't be talking about any of this publicly, but no one's really talking about announcing an attack.
Is McCain talking publicly about attacking Pakistan if Osama bin Laden were found there?
Well, in fact, he has essentially said the same exact thing on the campaign trail. And last night he wouldn't answer what the question was, which was whether or not he would respect Pakistan's sovereignty. Also, neither candidate addressed the fact that President Bush has already authorized these sorts of actions.
We're checking the facts of the presidential candidates at last night's debate, and we have one more fact to go into. It's one that McCain raised early in the debate. He criticized Senator Obama for voting for billions in pork barrel spending,
including, by the way, $3 million for an overhead projector at a planetarium in Chicago, Illinois.
We've gone to NPR's David Shaper, who covers Chicago, Illinois. David, did Obama actually ask for $3 million for an overhead projector?
Well, he did make the request, along with a bipartisan membership of the Illinois congressional delegation. But this is not your typical third-grade teacher's overhead projector in the classroom. What we're talking about here is the projector for the Sky Theater at the Adler Planetarium. And this is what the planetarium calls an experience of exploration of the wonders of the clear night sky projected on the dome of the historic Planetarium Theater. It's one, if not the most popular attraction or teaching tool at the Adler Planetarium.
Okay, so did the planetarium get the overhead projector?
Nope, the earmark request has not yet been funded.
That's NPR's David Shaper helping us to explore the wonders of checking the candidates' facts from last night's presidential debate. We also heard this morning from NPR's Michelle Kellerman, Richard Harris, Julie Rovner, and Jim Ciroli, and our regular guest David Wessel of the Wall Street Journal. You can download last night's debate and NPR's analysis, and you can also read more fact-checking from our reporters by going to npr.org. Our colleague Renee Montaigne is reporting from one of the states that may decide this fall's presidential election. She spent last evening at a debate party in Albuquerque, New Mexico. That's a state that went for George W. Bush in 2004 by just a few thousand votes. It went for Al Gore, the Democrat, in 2000 by just a few hundred votes. Now New Mexico is among the states that could go either way, possibly depending on the decisions of voters like the ones who watched the debate with Renee.
And Steve, this group of 15 undecided voters were undecided, it seemed, because they were taking their votes very seriously. Host Margaret Aragon de Chavez, herself an undecided Democrat because she's not quite over Hillary Clinton, had brought together registered voters from both parties.
And I'd like to welcome everybody. And really quickly, we have notepads for note-taking. If you want to just write down any information during the debate, you don't have to.
Margaret Aragon de Chavez is used to giving political parties. She was once the first lady of Albuquerque when she was married to a three-term mayor.
I think everybody has introduced themselves. So the debates, I think we have maybe a few more minutes. My clocks are always ahead because I'm always running late. So make yourself at home. This is an important debate.
Aragon de Chavez had one main rule, civility. No hooting, no cheering, no groaning. And once it was over, everyone crowded around her kitchen table and offered opinions. Strikingly, a fair number who were leaning towards one candidate moved over last night to the other.
Okay, Dominic.
Well, I didn't want to say who I was leaning towards, but I was kind of leaning towards Obama. And the devil's really in the details from what I saw during this debate, and I really missed a lot of the last one, so this one kind of tipped the kelter for me. And what I saw is it was really only one question that Obama really answered. And what I got from McCain was a lot of really intricate details, actual numbers, solutions, rather than pointing the finger. And kind of one of the things that I did throughout this thing is I kind of made a little check for every single time that Obama pointed the finger at Bush. And that was one of the things that was kind of annoying me is it kept bringing Bush, Bush, Bush. And I was like, well, I don't want to hear any more about what Bush did because it's over. He's a lame duck president. You know, what's the solution? How are we going to move forward? And really, the only question that that was really answered from Obama that seemed clear cut to me was the one that he had on health care. As far as John McCain, though, the thing that really appealed to me about him is his idea of how to bail the housing market out, actually buy the values and renegotiate them. So really, at this point, I'm kind of leaning towards McCain.
Dominic Aragon is a student in his late 20s who started a high-tech company. His switch from Obama to McCain was seconded by another young man at the table and then challenged by a woman in her 30s.
I actually heard something completely different than what you guys did in the sense that I thought McCain was pointing the finger a lot, and I did actually capture more solid answers from Obama than I did from McCain, such as like the tax credits that are going to be going on for businesses for insurance and his answer with healthcare and how it's a right instead of a responsibility, and his priorities kind of align more with mine as far as energy, healthcare, and then Social Security. So it's interesting. I heard something completely different.
Valerie Quintana is a behavioral health outreach worker for the state, and she said she came in truly undecided. Now she'll probably vote for Obama. And then there's Martinique Chavez, who surprised her Democratic mother by registering as a Republican. At 18, she'll be voting for the first time.
I've been swaying towards McCain this entire election, and after watching these debates, I've become more undecided because I think that I need to wait till another debate and see and learn more of the facts.
In New Mexico right now, polls show 14% of the voters are undecided. That's about twice the national average. Barack Obama does have a 5-point lead here over John McCain. But one guest at last night's debate party may well have predicted how long the uncertainty will last. Jim Rivera said he was leaving the party having made a decision, and that decision is he still needs more information.
So I will be looking and reading and following closely for the rest of the campaign here up until probably the day of voting.
In Albuquerque, New Mexico, I'm Renee Montaigne.
I'm Madhani Maturi, and it's the Political Rewind finally today. Blue Indiana? Not since 1964.
As national polls show Barack Obama opening up a lead in the race for the White House, John McCain finds himself battling in some unlikely states. Indiana is one of them, even though it's been reliably Republican in every presidential election since 1964. This year, economic worries are making it difficult for McCain to close the deal with voters whom he once thought he could count on. NPR's Don Gagne sent us this report from Indiana.
Sunset has lit the sky a bright pink over Craig Baum Field in Huntington, Indiana. The junior varsity Huntington North Vikings are wrapping up a close victory over the Marion Giants.
HNHS, the best! Last time, HNHS, the best! Go Huntington!
Gary Hall is here to watch his daughter, who's a cheerleader, but he's happy to talk politics for a moment. This is Northeast Indiana, a very Republican part of the state. Huntington is the hometown of former Vice President Dan Quayle. And Hall, a 52-year-old business owner, is firmly on board with John McCain.
I think he's a tough old codger. You know, I think he did well picking Palin. And she's kind of, you know, what she did in Alaska, I think is very impressive. Went against the party just to do what's right. And that really swayed me more. I was not going to vote Democratic or vote for Obama. He scares me.
Now, if this were a typical year, Gary Hall's take on things would be all you'd need to know about Indiana. The Republican would win here in a rout. But barely the length of a football field away, in the parking lot of the General Dollar Store across the street, we found another longtime Republican, a 50-year-old landscaping foreman named John Brenneman. He is not so sure about McCain.
Why?
He's a Bush follower, and Bush hasn't done much for this state, so in the last few years, especially in the last few years.
Then Brenneman says something that's right off a Barack Obama campaign poster.
I'm ready for a change. I mean, it's been tough the last couple years, so it's time for a change. We'll see what happens.
So when you say that, I hear a guy who's leaning Obama, even though he's a Republican.
Possibly, yeah. I'm not going to say either way.
Okay. In 2004, President Bush carried Indiana by 20 points. Right now, polls say the best McCain can claim is a 5-point lead. The struggling local economy and the latest news from Wall Street help Obama in the state. But it's also true that McCain has spent very little time or money here so far. While Obama has been running what one veteran Indiana analyst calls a boatload of TV ads, most of them highlighting the economy or Obama's biography. Perhaps the most dangerous thing for McCain is ambivalence among what should be his strongest supporters. That could affect turnout. On Main Street, in tiny downtown Roanoke, Jean Williams describes herself as a very loyal Republican. But listen to how she describes her vote this year.
If I don't want Obama, I have to take McCain. When I vote for McCain, it's more a vote against Obama.
Williams runs a small manufacturing business that employs 32 people. Her complaint is that McCain has clashed with his own party too often over the years. She says he's too liberal. Nearby, 70-year-old Larry Lahr emerges from the Roanoke post office and watches Williams talk. He's an independent who says the choice is tougher than usual this year.
I don't know yet. I really don't know. I think I'm going to flip a coin.
Really? Really? Well, I mean, could you seriously flip a coin?
I don't know.
The odds for McCain on Election Day in Indiana are probably better than a coin toss, but not by a lot. So expect him to step up his presence in the state in the final weeks of the campaign. But don't look for Obama to let up. In fact, his first big rally after tonight's debate is scheduled for the state fairgrounds in Indianapolis tomorrow. Don Gagne, NPR News, Fort Wayne.
Blue-leaning, red-leaning, battlegrounds and must-wins. Find them all on the 2008 election map at npr.org.